Hey there, and welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Dan McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Dan McFadden, a general assignment reporter with the Democrat Gazette, and we are back after an unfortunate week off, but we are back with a vengeance and with breaking news. Jared, you want to dive into what's possibly the biggest news of the NASCAR season so far? Mr. Jared Haas?
Well, it's good to be back, but we're back with some breaking news that happened this Tuesday midday. Toyota and Legacy Motor Club are together. It's no longer Chevy and Legacy Motor Club. They announced the manufacturer change for the 2024 NASCAR Cup Series season.
Yep, at 12:04 p.m. This afternoon, yes, Toyota Racing sent out the press release that next year the team that is co-owned by seven-time champion Jimmy Johnson would become the third Toyota house manufacturer team joining 2311 Racing and Joe Gibbs Racing. So, yeah, this is up there with Tyler Reddick going to 2311 Racing as far as that came out of nowhere. No one saw it coming. And it's been a long time coming. Toyota has, for years now, been kind of short on car power compared to Chevrolets and Fords. So now, going into next year, they will have eight full-time entries, which will be the most Toyota's had since 2011. So just what are, Jared, just off the bat, what are your thoughts about this whole marriage between Johnson, Richard Petty, sort of, and Toyota now?
Yeah, you might be a little bit confused with Ford, but it just made sense. Toyota's obviously looking to expand. They obviously had 2311 Racing come in at 2021. Joe Gibbs Racing's been their main teams, but they're still looking to expand, and Legacy Motor Club's kind of been off to a very rough start, especially Noah Gregson, kind of more just bad luck, but he's only had two lead lap finishes this season in his full-time rookie season, and that was, like I said, that was at Atlanta, and I believe the other one was at COTA, so I think it's just a good shakeup for Legacy Motor Club, even though they shook it up this offseason from changing the team name from Petty GMS to Legacy Motor Club. So it makes sense for that team to go to a different manufacturer and see what type of support they can get, because at the end of the day, they seem to be falling off a train from compared to last season. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Eric Jones seems a lot slower. Legacy Motor Club at Dover, Noah Gregson finished 34th. Eric Jones was able to finish 16th, but again, not really an impressive season for Legacy Motor Club this season.
No, and think about it this way. If you're looking at it from Legacy's perspective, it's better to be the number three team at a manufacturer rather than, what, fifth or whatever with Chevrolet right now, because they are like the newest team, mm-hmm. pretty much, when it comes to GM and Chevy. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Johnson said it in a press conference availability that ended just like 30 minutes ago. He says, we will be on equal footing with Joe Gibbs Racing in 2311. He says, well, we are a partner with GM and Chevy. We weren't a key partner.
Yeah.
So, you know, like the Hendrick Motorsports of the world. And right now I'm forgetting what the other Chevrolet teams.
Trackhouse, Colling Racing. Yeah. Even Spire's a Chevy team as well. Richard Childress Racing's a big Chevy team as well. So, I mean, it's a pretty crowded room in the Chevy department. So they wanted room to breathe. And, I mean, Toyota's looking for teams to have. And it just made sense on paper. And like I said, they're hoping for more and better things from Toyota at the end of the day.
So we got some audio from this press conference availability that was held earlier today featuring Jimmy Johnson, also team co-owner Maury Gallagher, and Eric Jones and Noah Gregson, plus David Wilson, the president of Toyota Racing Development. But yeah, here's a clip of Johnson talking about how this is a foundational piece for Legacy Motor Club going into the future.
You know, racing, when you move into a series and have that opportunity to chase the best ride possible. My best opportunity in IndyCar was with Chip Ganassi Racing. And at the same time, I still drove a Cadillac in the IMSA series. So, there are deep roots there and roots that will never change, and pride of accomplishment, friendships that are there. I'm so proud of the history books and what we all wrote together, but you know, time marches on, and there's a moment in time here that I have with this club and with the opportunity we have as an organization that you know, it's the foundational piece for us to grow and have success for years and years to come. So, you know, I have great excitement with what our future holds, and you know, certainly have had conversations with the folks at Chevrolet and also with Mr. Hendrick even this morning, explaining the announcement today, and full support, you know, full support from my friends at Chevrolet, full support from Mr. Hendrick. And one name I'd like to also add in, which I intended to do when we kicked this off, was full support from Richard Petty. You know, we are all competitors at heart, and you know, this is an opportunity to make us as competitive as possible in the future.
So what makes this move so much more foundational than what you could get from Chevrolet?
You know, directionally, I think that there's a lot that's unknown in the future of our sport. We're racing a new car, and frankly, I'm pretty new to the way we go racing now. When I left the sport, you know, there still was some testing. You know, there were other elements where teams could develop and work through stuff on their own. The way it is positioned now, it really is a function of the OEMs collecting the information, and that gets shared through the teams and through the organizations. And our deep alignment in 24 and beyond with Toyota puts us in a very strong position to control our own destiny as an organization.
And here's another clip from Johnson, as I quoted earlier, talking about how this move to Toyota will make a Legacy Motor Club on equal footing with 2311 Racing and Joe Gibbs Racing going forward.
You know, certainly within the framework we exist under in GM, you know, we are a partner. We're not officially a key partner, and you know, we acquire engines from the collaborative group, and then we also pay for you know, a technical alliance that we have with RCR, and we've had a great relationship there. But you know, there's no way around it. We're not, you know, in that top pecking order. We're working through RCR for the information that we receive, and in an opportunity that we have in the future, we're up on equal footing with 2311 and with Joe Gibbs Racing, and you know, that's big. That's real.
And I don't know if you realize this, Jared, but Jimmy Johnson was with GM for his entire NASCAR career. The exception, sort of, was the 2 years he spent over in IndyCar was with the Honda team.
Yeah.
So, but this took a lot of people by surprise that they couldn't have possibly imagined Jimmy Johnson being associated with any NASCAR manufacturer other than Chevrolet. It'd be like, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. leaving to go to another manufacturer in some sense. But this is also the team that's associated with Richard Petty.
Yeah. And like I said, you can feel the tension with those old race fans. Yeah. That are like, Richard Petty and Toyota, but Richard Petty, long history, long line of manufacturers that's Richard Petty Motorsports. Even,
but none of them foreign, though, correct?
No. Like I said, he's ran Oldsmobile, Chevy, Dodge, Pontiac. I mean, he's ran quite a bit, but I don't think there was like that foreign stuff. And I mean, race fans feel that tension with that foreign, those older racer fans, but I don't think it should be too much concern. It should be a bright side that, you know, Legacy Motor Club is getting that support from Toyota. But I mean, it's definitely different to see Jimmy Johnson and Richard Petty under the Toyota banner now.
Well, it should be clear, Richard Petty no longer actually has an ownership stake in Legacy Motor Club. He's simply there as a brand ambassador, figurehead, just, you know, kind of along for the ride. But Maury Gallagher, the co-owner of the Legacy Motor Club, said in this press conference, you know, Richard Petty blesses and encourages anything that makes us better.
Yeah.
Well, you don't...
That's the point, too, is, too, I think this would make their team a little bit better with that support from Toyota.
Oh, absolutely. But given the nature of this relationship between Jimmy Johnson now and Toyota going forward, David Wilson acknowledged that it's a polarizing partnership.
Yeah.
And he says, and some people might consider it a bit sacrilegious. So here's audio of what David Wilson had to say about this polarizing new partnership.
We're partnered with Jimmy as an owner first and foremost, and not in a superficial manner, but as a boots on the ground guy. You know, Jimmy and Maury are at this every day. And Maury, by the way, I think you have a day job, right? So it's Jimmy's day job to continue to put the pieces in place to make that team, to build that foundation, to continue add to that foundation. Everything on top of that is icing on the cake. But when you look at, you know, one of the very first lessons we learned, you know, and Maury talking about us being the new guy still, it's 20 years ago that we started in the sport, by the way, but we are still relatively the new guys. But one of the first things that we learned is a fan's opinion is going to be most influenced when it comes to the manufacturer by the drivers and the owners that we're partnered with. And I am not naive any longer. I know that this is a polarizing partnership for many of Jimmy's fans, for many of the Kings fans, right? And undoubtedly some will feel like it's a bit sacrilegious, but I'm not worried about that because I trust that over time our demonstrated respect for this partnership, for people, and the way we carry ourselves will soften that. So again, if Jimmy decides that he'd like to run a race here and there in a Toyota Camry, I think we can make that happen. And we'd like nothing more, but first things first.
All right. So I guess before we get into a recap of this last weekend's races at Dover Motor Speedway, this kind of opens up the conversation, Jared. So when it comes to your relationship with NASCAR as a fan over the years, how much do you care about manufacturers? Like, did you care about the symbol on the front of a car at all?
I mean, no, I was a very unique NASCAR fan. I didn't really, like I said, my favorite drivers were some one-off drivers that if I said them right now, you'd say who. but on the same token, too, a lot of fans that grew up, though, especially some of the older fans that watched back in the day, it was a lot of what won on Sunday sold on Monday, and they had that connection on there. And they're still, like I said, those Chevy fans and those Ford fans. So it's not like with now that there's no such thing as a manufacturer fan. They're still out there. It's not as common as it was back in the day, or the numbers were there. But, I mean, there's still that connection of like, hey, Jimmy Johnson, I'm a bow tie guy. He's a bow tie guy. He's my driver.
Yeah.
It's an identity crisis that's kind of been with these fans now in the past few hours since the news and announcements saying, okay, now he's a Toyota driver. Now what?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. I've never really had any affinity for any manufacturer. Like, in my family's home, we've had every single manufacturer in our driveway that you could think of: Chevy, Ford, Pontiac, Dodge,
Studebaker,
Chevy Astro van. So we've ran the gamut. So whenever I see someone like online or Reddit or something say, yeah, I'm a Chevy guy or I'm a Ford guy, it's never made sense to me why you're.
Well, it's that connection of like, hey, if you got a first car as a Camaro, and he's been buying Chevys ever since, that's where I feel like there's sense. There's that connection. I know, like I said, we're not in that fan aspect, but there's some people out there that are connected to that.
Well, no, I get like your family could have worked for Ford or Chevy, so that can tie into it. So I get it, but it just also doesn't like click for me. I've always rooted for teams or drivers themselves, saying, yeah, I'm rooting for him because he's a Ford driver. It's just it's always felt off to me.
I mean, it's even like I say to like an analogy of like baseball, when especially when in my World Series, my mom and I are big Cardinals fans. Mm-hmm. They just root for the NL team. So end of the day, it's a difference between the teams and the division between like Chevy, Ford, and Toyota. It's just another subset that you can divide those drivers and see mm-hmm. who you want to root for or root against in some cases too.
So moving on, I know we've shaken things up with the episode format today, but I thought it was
but it's not stirred.
But it's not. Yep. Good for you. Yes. Anyway, we're gonna recap this last weekend at Dover Motor Speedway, where it was if you were a driver with the last name of Truex, you're feeling pretty good right now.
You're bringing home trophies to the family reunion.
Oh yeah. The Truex brothers of Martin Truex Jr. and Ryan Truex swept the weekend at Dover Motor Speedway, with Martin Truex Jr. winning on Sunday Monday. I almost forgot. Winning on Monday in the rain-delayed cup race, and then his younger brother Ryan finally breaking through with his
win.
One
of, like I said, he's made 187 starts in the top three series in NASCAR without a win.
Wow.
188 start. And he's had a very varied career, a lot of part-time rides. He even ran for BK Racing, if you want to throw back that old name there. He was even a driver for that. So good for Ryan Truex to finally get that opportunity with Joe Gibbs Racing and seal the deal, unlike what happened basically in 2012, where he was up front and then lap cars held him out of the way. Ryan Truex was able to finally get redemption.
Yeah, he got his first Xfinity win in his 89th career Xfinity start, driving the number 19 for Joe Gibbs Racing, just like his brother. Congratulations to Ryan. But Martin Truex Jr. Breaks a 54-race winless streak, as Truex acknowledged in his post-race press conference. He's had much longer winless streaks in his career, but 54 races, he missed the playoffs last year.
That's the biggest thing right there, is before, from 2017 to 2021, he finished, first or second, besides 2020, finished seventh, but then in 2022, finished 17th because he didn't get a win. And that's why the winless streak was such more prominent to compared to other winless streaks that he's had. It's because, because he didn't get that win in the 2022 season, he was out of the playoffs. And mm-hmm. now he doesn't have to worry about that much. He's got his win to punch his ticket into the playoffs.
So he didn't dominate this race. For a while, this looked like it was going to be a Hendrick Motorsports day, with William Byron led 193 of 400 mm-hmm. laps. Ross Chastain, who finished second, led 98 laps. But Truex himself led 68 laps.
It was a day of comers and goers. I'm at least thankful that the track and the race was a lot nicer compared to what it was Saturday and Sunday. In practice, there was quite a few spins.
Sunday was wet.
Well, Sunday was wet, but I'm talking about in practice, they were able to practice. And there was a couple spins. I think it was like mm-hmm. Eric Jones, Suarez. They weren't leaving rubber. They were leaving dust off the track. And I was like, that's not looking good. That's not taking mm-hmm. rubber. But we saw it take rubber on Sunday, and that's where we saw comers and goers throughout this race. William Byron looked like the car he was going to win, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden late and kind of faded back. And, Truex and Chastain used strategy to, especially Truex, to stay up there and keep the win.
Well, it looked like Ross was going to be the guy to win for a little bit. He won stage two. Mm-hmm. But this race, it started off kind of rough. It felt like it was going to be like, oh, great, another one of those cautions breed cautions kind of race. And it was like that for like the first,
40 laps.
I'd say 82. Let's go with 82. And I think Mike Joy said a stat that said there were more cautions in the first 40-ish laps or 80-ish laps at Dover it was the most cautions at Dover that early in the race since like the early 80s. I think that's what he said, which would be very impressive. But once you got through the one wreck we'll talk about here in a second between Kyle Larson,
Chastain, and
Brendan Poole, once you got through that, it was a green race right up until 14 to go when Joey Logano wrecked to bring out the final caution. So like there's only 12 cars that finished on the lead lap. That's an old school Dover race.
Let's go through the top 10, Daniel. Starting out with race winner Martin Truex Jr., second with Ross Chastain, third Ryan Blaney, as we mentioned, William Byron is fourth. Denny Hamlin, still looking to get white hot, is finished in fifth. Christopher Bell was sixth. Tyler Reddick finished seventh. Brad Keselowski in eighth. Chris Buescher in ninth. And rounding out the top 10, super sub Josh Berry subbing for Alex Bowman this time.
So, yeah, because we missed last week, we didn't get to address the fact that, yes, Josh Berry is a sub again at Hendrick Motorsports, this time for Alex Bowman in the 48, who broke his back. Mm-hmm. In a sprint car, or was it a midget race?
It was a dirt race in Iowa.
Okay, but yeah, he had a pretty gnarly flip, and he'll be out at least 3 weeks.
3 to 4 weeks.
To 4 weeks. So yeah, Josh Berry's getting his second shot. So that's his third top 10 finish in relief so far.
And there's speculation that Josh Berry might have a cup ride lined up for 2024. That's going to be announced at Charlotte.
Maybe. I'm not reporting that as fact.
There's a lot of people talking about it. We'll see, but we'll leave that speculation to the speculators.
But no, one thing that's really impressive is Brad Keselowski in eighth, Chris Buescher in ninth. Keselowski looked like he could have had a car to win, but then he unfortunately had that uncontrolled tire penalty in the pits, and he came out in pit second on that pit stop.
Yeah.
So, but both RFK Racing cars in the top 10. That's the first time. This is the first time that RFK has had more than one car finish in the top 10 in back-to-back races since 2014.
I think Brad Keselowski is starting to build onto something where, you know, he's getting both teams to be consistently well. And it seemed like, you know, a couple of years before Brad Keselowski took forward, it seemed like the 17 car was ahead of times, most of the times from the 6 car. Now it seems like the 6 and the 17 are pretty equal in their standards.
Well, I picked Keselowski to win this race largely because Dover's kind of like a big Bristol in many ways.
Yeah.
And last year in the Bristol Night Race, it was the two RFK cars that were fairly dominant.
I was interested on that. I picked William Byron to win, considering the fact Hendrick Motorsports has performed well, and he was looking well for most of the race, except he faded late. But I mean, again, Truex and Ross Chastain. Last year, they were up in the front for this race as well, too. So they were two kind of sleeper picks that finished 1-2.
So going back to Truex, here's some audio of him talking about snapping his 54-race winless streak and talking about, hey, I've been through worse. So here's that clip.
Zach Sterniolo, NASCAR.com. Martin, congratulations. You end this winless streak. You talked about what it means for the family. What are the emotions, or I guess how emotional of a weekend has this been, given you end such a long winless streak? You see your brother finally...
It isn't that long.
That's fair.
54 races? I've went way longer than that before.
You were winning quite a bit before
that. Such a long winless streak. I mean, Jesus. I've only won 32 of these things now, you know? you guys. It's really, really hard to win these races, okay?
Well, that's what I mean. And so to break through that barrier for yourself and then see Ryan do it on the same weekend, how emotional of a weekend is it?
Yeah, no, it's super awesome. You know, honestly, it's very special. And, you know, happy my dad was here for that. So just, you know, really cool. Ryan's been through a lot. And he's really worked hard. And you know, he's gotten beat down and knocked down a lot and been through some tough times that he's had to, you know, kind of persevere through. So I was just really happy for him. But like I said, yeah, I mean, it's there, you know, it's not a long list of brothers that have swept a weekend in NASCAR racing history. And, you know, to be on that list with some of the guys that have done is really, really cool for both of us and our whole family.
Jared, do you remember where you were when Martin Truex Jr. won his second cup race?
Gosh. I remember his first cup win at Dover in 2007. Yeah. I got to look that up. His second one, oh gosh, it's Sonoma,
yeah.
2013. I was probably still back at home being still living in the town. But yeah, it's a weird that he had a long string of, yeah, like he finally broke through and then he was still waiting for those wins at DEI. And then he got his win with Michael Waltrip Racing in 2013.
I often can't tell you where, well, I can't almost tell you where I was for most races because I'm usually in front of my TV watching the race.
Yeah.
But because of it had been so long in 2013 when Truex won that Sonoma race, I remember exactly where I was. I was in the back room at a Walmart where I was working that summer, and I checked my phone to see what was going on in the race, and you know, it says Truex won. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that.
Yeah, that was the same season as Spingate. So, I mean, like I said, it's glad that Truex has finally shedded that and was able to capture that win at Dover.
So going back to Truex, as we've already discussed, his long winless streaks, he was asked post-race if at any point, like in the last year or so, if he ever thought or doubted that he would win again. And here was his answer.
And I know you joke that it wasn't all that long a streak, but were there any thoughts of like, man, I might not win again?
There always is. You never know, you know, when your last win's going to be or what's going to happen. You know, certainly in those 54 races, there's certainly a bunch of them that we probably should have won or had the best car. And you know, I think as tough as that is to swallow when those heartbreaking races happen, it keeps you motivated. It keeps your mind like, okay, yeah, we know we can do it, right? Like, if the belts don't fall off the engine, we're going to win Darlington. If, you know, if we didn't use a set of tires in stage one at Richmond, we're going to win, you know, Richmond. So it's like you have all these races throughout that period that it's like, okay, we were good enough to win. We should have won. It's not like we can't do this. We just need to put it all together. And that kind of, it's kind of like that carrot dangling out in front of you. You know, you can get it. You just gotta find a way. So, yeah, it definitely helps to be running good. If you're not running good and you're not challenging for wins and you're not leading laps, then yeah, it's like you don't know if you'll ever win again. But other than that, it's when you're running good, you know it's going to happen eventually.
Okay, Jared, so talking about that Sonoma race that Truex won 10 years ago, mm-hmm. It was 10 years ago, 2013. If I had told you 10 years ago that a decade from then, Martin Truex Jr. would be named one of the 75 greatest NASCAR drivers ever, what would your reaction have been?
There have been a lot to prove, and he has proven quite a bit, especially with this tenure with Furniture Row Racing. I mean, he picked up and had quite a few mm-hmm. good years with them before they shut down.
But it's just insane to think, though. Like, he's had a very bizarre career.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wins in 2007 and then just drops off the face of the planet
for seven years. The thing was, he dropped with Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, and mm-hmm. he was still, and he dropped down, and he, fortunately for him, he was on the climb with MWR when they were struggling.
Which is Michael Waltrip Racing.
Michael Waltrip Racing, and he got that win, about made the playoffs, and obviously that spin gate happened, yep. Took things out of a spiral out of his own hands, and then ended up with Furniture Row Racing and was clicking off races and won the championship even too with that team. So, what was that, 2017, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's definitely a tumultuous career that Martin Truex Jr. has, and he even held his own, like I said, with Joe Gibbs Racing. He's won quite a few races with them as well. So I think it's just something that proves that integrity is a big part of this sport.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, as part of NASCAR's 75th anniversary, NASCAR is releasing a list of its 75 greatest drivers of all time, which is something they did back in 1998 for the 50th anniversary. And so they're adding 25 to this list, and they're releasing five each week up until the Darlington throwback weekend. And Martin Truex Jr. was added to that list today. And so far they have gotten, I think, 12 or...
Yeah, they've gotten 13, a handful. They're a little over halfway on this.
So, yeah, so far what's been announced has been Bobby Labonte, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Ron Hornaday Jr., who is a four-time Truck Series champion.
He's won quite a few Truck Series championships.
Sterling Marlin, Jeff Burton, Carl Edwards, Ryan Newman, Denny Hamlin, Greg Biffle, two-time Xfinity Series champion Randy LaJoy, Casey Kane, Mike Stefanik, who was a seven-time NASCAR Modified Series champion and two-time Busch North Series champion, Tony Stewart, and now Truex today. So of these drivers, who that have been announced so far, I really only have like one quibble, real quibble, and that's Sterling Marlin being on this list. Sterling Marlin had 748 starts in the NASCAR Cup Series across 33 years. He won only 10 times. Oh. He won back-to-back Daytona 500s. I know that.
Yeah.
He won at Darlington a couple of times, and plus Talladega. But I don't get how you have 10 wins across 33 years and 748 starts and be considered one of the 75 greatest NASCAR drivers ever. That doesn't make any sense to me. What about you?
I'm okay with Sterling Marlin. I mean, he's had a lot of years, and he was with Morgan McClure. I mean, it was a different time back in the day with Morgan McClure was really strong in super speedway racing. So I don't really have too much of that beef. I feel like Sterling Marlin is kind of more in the same realm of like Casey Kane. Casey Kane has a little bit better numbers and less starts, but I felt like his program was a lot better. And plus two, he was a Hendrick Motorsports driver. So I mean, that's, like I said, it's a list and it's going to be subjective to say who's the 75 greatest drivers. But I mean, this is not someone we have someone out of left field. I think, you know, Ron Hornaday Jr. is a good pick. I wouldn't be surprised. Jack Sprague's won 3 Truck Series championships.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, he would be a good pick.
He should be in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely underrated. I think what helped to Ron Hornaday's case was he did win 4 championships. He ironically won them separated a year. He won 96 and 98, and then he came back to win in 2007 and 2009.
Wow, so that's a huge gap.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he ran Cup Series racing and Xfinity Series racing at times. So I don't really have too much of that beef of like quells yet. It's not like they're not throwing like Travis Quaff on that list.
Well, if you go back and look at the original 50,
yeah,
Jeffrey Bodine is on it. That surprised me when I looked last week. Like I didn't expect that.
Yeah,
that he'd be on that. Like he hasn't even been nominated for the Hall of Fame yet.
Yeah, I think there's a handful of drivers that are on that list that haven't been nominated for the Hall of Fame yet. So, I mean, it's a lot of wait and see. And I think when they made that list, I think they were Again, it's 50 years. I can't go back to 1998. I was a wee little toddler back then. So,
well, I like that Randy LaJoie is on it because he won two championships in 96 and 97. Outside of Dale Jr., he was like that last Busch Series full time driver that won titles before the bushwhacking era really got underway.
Yeah, him and Jeff Green. Yeah, yeah, there was not a lot of that bushwhacking era really and bushwhacking slash the up and comings, Martin Truex we mentioned. He won 2 championships with Brian Vickers. They were the young guns in the sport. But yeah, it's nice to see a good old veteran, as they say, to get that nod for 75 greatest drivers.
How do you feel? Cuz basically they're just putting on, if you have a cup championship, you're going to be part of this list. But when Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott were announced as being part of the 75, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. It was like, come on, it's still early. I mean, when Jeff Gordon was announced, he was the young guy in 98. But
they realized they've already accomplished this much, and there's much more to accomplish for Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson. I think that's the biggest thing in itself is I've already, both of those drivers have already won a championship.
Yeah, I know. So. But it's like, I know they did it back in 98, but like putting active guys on it feels weird to me. It just does. Like, but this isn't the Hall of Fame we're talking about.
Yeah. Anyway, I like to make a point out that there's still some throwback paint schemes. They're announced some.
Yes.
I mean, yes, mixing between legends and current drivers.
Yeah, so in 3 weeks, on May 21st, not May 21st.
Next week after the May 14th.
Yes. Next weekend, after this weekend's race at Kansas Speedway, is the race at Darlington Raceway, which is the annual throwback weekend. And since 2015, they've been doing this since 2015. And as part of that, pretty much almost the entire field comes decked out in throwback paint schemes from across NASCAR history. It's kind of taken the place of what the Winston used to be back in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, where teams would come out with these alternative paint schemes. And it's one of my favorite weekends.
Oh, yeah. You get to tell all the stories, too. So,
yeah, there's been about a handful of Cup paint schemes that have been announced so far. The one that was announced today for via Trackhouse Racing was for Ross Chastain. His number one Chevrolet will look like Dale Jarrett's UPS scheme.
From 2001.
From
UPS versus FedEx, baby.
No, UPS is actually going to be on the hood of the car.
Yeah.
Because Worldwide Express, who's the actual sponsor, is like a shipping partner of some sort with UPS. So UPS will be on the hood. So you get the original scheme, you get the original sponsor. Mwah. Mwah.
I like William Byron's paint scheme. I want to see, especially person I'm excited about that for Chromelusion.
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 Chromelusion. Yes,
you're more like an illusion. but I mean, I'm excited to see how they can pull that off, because I think I'd be, you know, they've done special like paint schemes. Remember that one here with Jamie McMurray, have the color changing hood with Axe. I think it was 2010.
No.
Or was it 2011? I think it was 2010. But they actually had it where it was color changing. When the engine was on, it changed color of the hood.
Huh.
You got to look that up. But I'm excited for that one. I think that's going to be look.
For reference, William Byron's scheme, nicknamed Chromelusion, is based on the 50th anniversary scheme that Jeff Gordon had in the Winston back in 1998. So instead of DuPont, it'll have Exalta on it, which is basically DuPont. Even though it sounds like a medication.
And then there's Daniel Suarez.
Daniel Suarez.
He gained Quaker State sponsorship earlier this year and is throwing it back to Ricky Rudd.
Yes, his 1988-89 Quaker State,
yes.
Scheme. It looks fire, as the kids like to say. Looks fire. What? That's what they say.
The kids is very interesting. I thought you're part of the cool crowd, Daniel.
It's lit, right?
We'll leave it at that.
But no, the quick, Daniel Suarez, Ricky Rudd, Quaker State scheme for the number 99 car, original sponsor, original scheme, looks absolutely great. I'm looking forward to that, seeing that. Also, down in the truck series, Worldwide Express, who's sponsoring, Chastain is also sponsoring Carson Hocevar, and he's going to have UPS on his truck too. And it's the
people want to race the truck.
Yes, it's that
same
truck.
Year as the Ross Chastain throwback too.
Okay, cool, good. I like that sync up. So yeah, those are the main ones from Cup that have been announced so far. Unless
they're announcing this come. There's a few Xfinity as well too, but I mean, we might touch on them before as we go into them, but. Like I said, I always like those throwback paint schemes.
Oh, yeah. Best day of the week. One of the best weekends of the year. All right. Time to move on to the final segment of this week's episode as we preview Sunday's race at Kansas Speedway. All right, Jared. It feels weird saying this, but it feels like May is going to be like a normal month for NASCAR when it comes to tracks that we visit. Starting this previous Sunday, which was May 1st, we got Dover, and now we head to a stretch of races that includes the 1.5 mile Kansas Speedway, Darlington Raceway, then the All-Star Race at the newly resurrected North Wilkesboro Speedway, and then after that, the Coke 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Yep.
So it feels like a normal month.
And both of us are going to be covering at least one race this month. You'll be down in North Wilkesboro. I will be down in Charlotte.
Okay. Have you been there yet?
I have not.
All right. Okay.
That was my first time, besides flying in Charlotte, actually leaving the airport at Charlotte.
All right. Well, I have some places you need to visit for me.
make a list, and I'll check it out.
All right. But no, this weekend, the Advent Health 400 at Kansas Speedway, Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Last year's races at Kansas Speedway were swept by 2311 Racing and the number 45 car, but each race was won by a different driver. In the spring, it was Kurt Busch earning his final NASCAR Cup win And then in the fall, it was Bubba Wallace earning his second NASCAR Cup win. In the fall, let me bring that up. In the fall, Bubba Wallace was first over Denny Hamlin, Christopher Bell, Alex Bowman, and Martin Truex Jr. Bowman led the most laps with 107. And in the spring,
was Kurt Busch led 116. And I think this is, for my little bit of preview, I think we're going to see that traditional Hendrick Motorsports versus Toyota, Joe Gibbs Racing in 2311. And I still, I think I got a Toyota for my pick to win.
Who do you got?
He's waiting to get white hot. I think he's red hot. I think this is the weekend he gets white hot. You know it. He drives in the number 11 car, Denny Hamlin. I think, you know, again, Toyota has been really dominant here. 2311 is going to make a run for their money, but I think Denny Hamlin gets it done. Finally executes on pit road. No mistakes. He gets his win.
No whammies.
No whammies. Stop.
I'm so glad you get that reference.
No Michael Waltrips either.
Okay.
There's a pre-race segment at Talladega that featured Michael Waltrip as a whammy. So that is that.
I missed that.
The more you know.
Oh, dear. Okay. anyway, but no. Kansas Speedway for a long time. It was one of those tracks I just dreaded.
Cookie cutter.
It just did not put on good racing, like, at all. But that changed last year with the next-gen car.
Mm-hmm.
The races were really good. The spring race where Kurt Busch had battled with Kyle Larson and then, like, used some veteran skills or whatever to get by him in the closing laps was riveting to watch. And like I'm still adamant that Kansas Speedway doesn't need two races, mostly because no one's attending, no one is showing up.
They're all at the casino.
But if they can continue with the pace of the kind of races that track puts on, I'm all on board.
Yeah,
because
this is what the next gen car was kind of more made. You know, it benefited these mile and a half tracks, so. I'm excited too. Like I said, that we're going back to Kansas Speedway. I'm okay with it now. I mean, if it was 10, 20 years ago, no, but I'm okay with it with now, unless there's like a super track that we're going to bring back from with the NASCAR nostalgic. But Kansas Speedway is all right in my book as well.
So yeah, in last spring's race, there were 18 lead changes, which that's a lot.
Yeah.
I think.
And Daniel, you didn't even give your pick to win.
Well, I'm getting there. I think the number 45 is going to go to victory lane again.
Tyler Reddick.
I'm taking Tyler Reddick. So we're going to get three straight wins at the track, same number, different drivers.
He did lead some laps in the spring too.
Mm-hmm. He was a front runner, and then I believe he was one of the guys who lost the that was the one
the
thing,
tire
the tires the tires were a problem in the spring race. I don't remember
the not really the fall.
Yeah, but in the spring, yes, there were lots of drivers.
I remember you talking to Greg Stuckner about that.
Did I? I don't think I didn't talk to him one on one. He came. Yeah, but he did come to the media center to talk about it.
Yeah.
So, but no, that was a big concern last year, but not. Hopefully, it won't be this year. As we go to Kansas Speedway for the first time this year. So I got Tyler Reddick. You got Denny Hamlin. So like before we close out, like I said, we got a normal month. What's your forecast for the races over the next month of going to Kansas, Darlington, North Wilkesboro, and Charlotte?
I mean, I think we're getting normal racing, but we're getting into silly season already. NASCAR has been way in the past, like 20 years ago, silly season was happening in September and October. It's getting earlier and earlier and earlier. And at this time point, it seems like it's May is when silly season starts to happen because teams realize that if you got to win, you're in, you're fine, you're comfortable. If you don't, you're going to start searching for stuff. And announcements I've already made. We already had this one in May. So I expect a couple more big announcements to shake up, you know, the 2024 and beyond Cup Series field.
So I need to, like, I guess write it all down, but like what are the, well, we know the four cars going to be vacant.
Yes.
With Kevin Harvick retiring. What else is there?
So, I mean, the biggest thing is that. And then Eric Almirola is still there. Martin Truex is junior. He obviously came back. We know there's some things. Hendrick Motorsports is still going to stay. Another big question mark is Denny Hamlin, especially the sponsorship with FedEx. We saw what happened with Kyle Busch when he lost a sponsorship with M&M, which was a pretty big sponsorship. He walked and he went to Richard Childress Racing. So there's still a few question marks that are surrounding other drivers. Most drivers are set. But I expect if there's going to be big changes happening to the Cup Series garage, it's going to be for next year, it's going to be happening in May. It's going to be starting to domino effect here.
All right. Well, I hope you're right. I hope we have some more stuff to talk about. So, but anyway, that will do it for this week's episode of Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. I'm Daniel McFadden. This has been Jared Haas. Jared, where can they reach you?
You can find me on Twitter at RealJaredHaas. And again, like I said, I will be there providing an update, you know, get updates, find interesting NASCAR facts, but that is where you can find me.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden, or you can email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. So that will do it for us. Again, the Sunday's Cup race at Kansas Speedway is at 2 p.m. Central Time on Fox Sports 1. So, again, thank you guys for listening and watching this week. We'll see you back here next week. Take care.